Okay. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. So, Honorable Helen, seems you're going to have a good day today. Welcome, honorable members. We have a long week. National Energy Regulator. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. So some of you are part of this portfolio committee. So we've got to see you every morning when we meet here. Welcome, Honorable Makai. So you feel safer now. So let's start. Let's start with the presentation. Before that, let's ask the secretary to tell us if there are any apologies. And then we'll get the two presentations from NERSA. I know members are in a good mood today, so we shouldn't have too much difficulties.
Thank you, Chair. Just the following apologies. Honorable Makubele Mashele, who's writing exams, is unable to attend the meeting. And then Honorable Maya Beslala, who indicated that she will be joining us later for the meeting, Chair. Those are the apologies, Chair. And then also an apology from the Deputy Minister, Chair.
From NERSA, I don't know whether the chairperson is going to start.
Sure, yeah.
First, and introduce the distinguished leadership of the National Energy Regulator of South Africa.
By the way, the word of South Africa is not in our formal name, but we do use it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I've listened to other people who have nostalgia about their exile days. So
yeah,
they used to come in and then they say, African National Congress, and they keep quiet. And then they say, of South Africa. I'm sure Honorable Khleleng has heard that before. thanks very much, go ahead, Chair.
Yeah. Once again, thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. I think we thank you for inviting us to brief you on our annual report. And as you've said, Chairperson, we have two presentations. The first one by NASA itself, which will be presented led primarily by our Chief Executive Officer, who I'll introduce in a little while. And then the Chair of Audit Committee will do a separate presentation. Let me take the opportunity to introduce the team that is here. And once again, I have to say, I always feel proud if you see the ladies who are sitting next to me here. Today, I think we messed up our ratio a little bit by inviting an extra man. So I'm not the only man here today, but I'll do the introductions nonetheless. Our CEO, Phindile Baleni, who I'm sure the committee has met a number of times. As I said, she'll run the first portion of the presentation primarily. And then our CFO, on my right-hand side here, Zanele Ngwete. She's our Chief Financial Officer. She'll help the CEO on the finance side of the presentation. And then on my left-hand side is the Chairperson of our Audit Committee, Ms. Khomotso Mthimunye. So she'll do the presentation of the Audit Committee. And then behind me, we've got Esther Filion, who's the Senior Manager Strategic Planning and Monitoring. Vetu McKenzie, next to her, who's the Senior Manager in the Office of the CEO. And let's start with Charles. Mr. Charles Kleber is the Head of Communication. And it's Masisi Malope, just next to Charles there. She's our Chief Audit Executive. So you'll see that the ladies really occupy all the important positions within NASA. And I have to say once again that we're proud of that. Now, we've got an agenda set out. If you either look on the screen on the slides themselves, this agenda just leads to the first portion of the presentation. So I'll just very briefly go through introduction, mandate, and key highlights. And then the CEO, assisted by the CFO, will do the main presentation. I hope everybody has the slides, the printed slides, and then we'll take questions afterwards. I know we've come to the committee before just to introduce NASA, who we are, and that sort of thing. If you go to page 6, slide number 6, so mine will be a very, very brief recap of who NASA is and what we do. So we are Schedule 3, a public entity in accordance with the PFMA. We were established in 2005, and we regulate really three industries. We regulate the electricity industry, pipe gas industry, and petroleum industry. And in accordance with our mandate, we do try and balance the interests of the public and the interests of our licensees. Now, again, to highlight, we are independent regulator. Now, although we report functionally to the Minister of Energy, we still are an independent regulator, and some of the regulatory decisions, we try and take them independently, obviously within the policies of government, and as the CEO will indicate. When we go through our financials, you'll see that we fund it primarily from levies, so we don't get any distributions from the fiscus. And however, we do look after the funding that we get from our licensees. Okay, if you go to then slide number 9, again, I'm a mandate. Again, it's just to remind you what we do. We issue licenses and set out conditions for license in all those three industries we regulate. We set and approve tariffs. We monitor and enforce compliance with license conditions. So the CEO will explain in the details the work that we've done this year in that regard. We involved in dispute resolution through mediation, arbitration, and complaints. Some of the investigations we initiate ourselves, others we obviously get from the public and affected parties. We gather, store, and disseminate industry information. We set rules, guidelines, and codes for regulations of these three industries. We determine conditions of supply and standards. And we do registration of imports and production activities. So that's in summary what we do. But for the financial year, and which is what we're going to be focusing on, these are some of our key highlights. I have to say to you that we are very, very proud that once again we've had a clean audit opinion for the Auditor General. And in fact, from NESA's point of view, we've never actually had a qualified audit opinion. And it's a tradition that we're proud of. And thanks to the CEO and the team, they continue to do fantastic work in that regard. But we'll look at the details from the Auditor General's report. We've improved quite a bit on performance against targets. We've achieved 90% of the targets that were set in the strategic plan and in the APA, the annual performance plan that we presented to you. And we'll show you the detail. We continue to look after our finances, so we have reported a net surplus of $16 million. And again, as the CEO will explain, we don't keep some of these surpluses. We actually give it back to our licensees as a rebate on the levies that we charge in the future. You'll see in the annual reports that there are no fruitless and wasteful expenditures, and a really tiny amount of irregular expenditure. In fact, we read the Business Day this morning. They had the figures completely wrong because they mentioned a figure of 600,000 from NESA of irregular expenditure, which was completely wrong. You'll see when we look at the financials that it's a tiny little 64,000 rands, which the CFO will deal with. And we reduced our vacancy rate to 5%. So all in all, it's been a satisfying year, although there's still challenges, and we will deal with them as the CEO goes through the details. Thank you, CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chair of the Committee and members of the Committee, we'll now present NERSA's report, and the first section we'll deal with is our strategic plan. In our strategic plan, we have strategic outcome-oriented goals, which are required by the new planning framework, I suppose, which is not so new anymore. And these goals are cascaded from the mandate, and they reflect the key policy priorities of government. These goals underscore NERSA's role in facilitating the achievement of the national socio-economic and socio-political development agenda. And our strategic outcome-orientated goals are the following, and these should be understood within the limits of NERSA's mandate. So the first goal is to facilitate security of supply in order to support a sustainable socio-economic development in South Africa. Secondly, to facilitate investment in and access to infrastructure in the energy industry, again, to support sustainable socio-economic development. Thirdly, to promote competitive and efficient functioning as well as orderly development of the energy industry in the country, to facilitate affordability and accessibility to the energy services, to balance the economic interests of all stakeholders, and lastly, to position and establish NERSA as a credible and reliable regulator in order to create regulatory certainty, to contribute towards regulatory certainty. How do these goals link to key government policy priorities? So if we start with the national outcomes that government outlined in the previous term of office and continue to be valid in the current term of office from this year's elections, we align ourselves to 6 of the 12 outcomes, and it's the even-numbered outcomes, so it's outcome 2, a long and healthy life for South Africans, outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive economic growth, 6, an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network, outcome 8, sustainable human settlements and improved quality of household life, 10, environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced, and lastly, outcome 12, which is an efficient, effective, and development-orientated public service and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. So in relation to the national outcomes, how does the NERSA contribute to each of those? Again, if I start with outcome 2, how do we contribute to a long and healthy life for all South Africans? By taking affordability into consideration when we set or approve tariffs and prices, by determining, for instance, in electricity, inclining block tariffs, which means that those who use less pay a little lesser per unit, and the more you use, you pay more, and the free basic electricity tariffs to protect the low-income electricity consumers, by facilitating the conclusion of power purchase agreements between buyers and sellers of renewable energy, the IPPs, regulating in a manner that facilitates security of supply as well as policy advocacy with regards to cleaner fuels. If you look at outcome 4, how do we contribute to decent employment through inclusive economic growth, through our licensing and setting of tariffs and prices, and in this manner we create preconditions towards the achievement of this outcome. We are by approving the renewable energy licenses to ensure that socio-economic development commitments specified by the Department of Energy in the bidding processes are met, so those are also made license conditions. Promoting companies that are owned and controlled by historically disadvantaged individuals to become competitive as per government policy, and regulating in a manner which facilitates, again, security of supply. Outcome 6, an efficient and competitive and responsive infrastructure network. By setting and approving cost-reflective tariffs and prices that encourage efficient investment. Secondly, by facilitating and enforcing third-party access, particularly in relation to pipe gas. Monitoring and ensuring compliance and undertaking technical audits leading to regular maintenance and refurbishment of infrastructure and therefore to improved quality of supply. Lastly, promoting competition and competitiveness in relation to both gas and petroleum pipelines. Outcome 8, sustainable human settlements and improved quality of household life. We contribute through facilitating access to energy service in the way we regulate, facilitating reliability of supply, monitoring and maintenance of infrastructure that will go to quality of supply, compliance monitoring with license conditions, taking affordability into consideration when we set prices. Again, the IBTs and the free basic electricity come in here. Energy efficiency promotion, as well as dispute resolution, including mediation, arbitration, and handling of complaints. Outcome 10, environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. As NERSA, when we issue licenses, what we do is we make compliance with the National Environmental Management part of National Environmental Management Act part of the license conditions. So if somebody did not comply with that act, their license that we issue could come up for review. We're promoting energy efficiencies and licenses, and as an organization, we also participate in energy efficiency initiatives. We facilitate the implementation of the integrated resource plan through considering and concurring with the determinations made by the minister. In this particular instance, the major determinations related to the introduction of renewable IPPs. We monitor the implementation of the IRP, the Integrated Energy Plan. Once it is promulgated, it will come and will be monitored by us, as well as the Gas Utilization Master Plan, again, once promulgated. We also are facilitating the transition to the low carbon economy that the country has embarked upon. In relation to outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, an empowered and a fair and inclusive citizenship, our processes as NERSA are transparent and do involve public participation, and we do take public participation seriously. All the decisions that we make, as well as the reasons, are made public. The public is invited to make comments prior to decisions being made, whether it's in writing or it's at public hearings. We run customer education programs, and we also embark on training and development for staff, but also for our stakeholders, including particularly the training of electricity distributors on the completion of their forms, but also in relation to all the other initiatives we take. We do go out and train our stakeholders. We also participate as NERSA in the Clean Energy Education and Empowerment Program, C3E, which is the part of the Clean Energy Ministerial Program, an international or global program. We have our social investment activities, and we also participate in the TechnoGirls program, where at the moment we've got 10 girl child learners. I suppose that's how we should refer to them properly. The program seeks to expose girl child learners from disadvantaged schools to the world of work from when they're in grade 9, and we keep them until they're in grade 12. And hopefully by that point we have taken sufficient interest to ensure that they pass and pass well, and they choose maths and science, and they have mentors and people who will accompany them on their journey of preparing them for being party to the South African economy. We'll show some pictures later on about this. And what we do with this program is that these learners, once a week every holiday, they spend at NERSA, so three times a year, they spend a week within the organization with mentors, and we expose them as well to the operations of our licensees. And in fact, there they are. In the picture there, it's the two groups now. So these ones and these, the five, they're from the new group that we took this year. The ones that we've been with from their grade 9 and they're now in grade 11 are these ones. They come from schools within the catchment area of the regulator, so mostly it's Mamelodi and Soshanguve, Yesterus and Lodium, disadvantaged areas in the catchment area, and the idea is to keep them as close as take. The program is run nationally, but what they do is when they get an employer, they try and get children closest to the employer in order to save costs and to make sure that the program is practical. We have had an interaction with their teachers as well, and we might expand the program to cover the teachers as well from a career guidance point of view. If I then go back to the government programs, now we look at the National Development Plan and see how NERSA contributes to the achievement of the milestones that are highlighted in the National Development Plan. And the key milestones we look at there is milestones 4, 5, 6, and 10. And in order to avoid repetition, let me rather refer to the milestones as I show how we contribute to them. So milestone 4, to establish a competitive base of infrastructure, human resources, and regulatory frameworks. So through the publication of rules, codes, and guidelines for the regulation of electricity, pipe, gas, and petroleum industries, we contribute to a firm regulatory framework through the setting of rules and frameworks that facilitate the building of new infrastructure, setting and approving cost-reflective tariffs and market-related prices that encourage investment, facilitating and enforcing third-party access to facilities, monitoring and compliance, as well as transparent processes and public participation. Milestone 4 continued. As indicated, public participation processes include involvement of the public at various phases of the work that we do. Milestone 5, ensuring that skilled, technical, professional, and managerial posts better reflect the country's racial, gender, and disability makeup. We do through this through the development of the employment equity. We've got an employment equity plan that's being implemented. the development and implementation of the Youth Employment Accord. We've taken the Youth Employment Accord and we've made one of our matrices against which we report, and we do indicate in terms of the milestones set out in the Youth Employment Accord how we are doing as an organization. We have implemented a learnership program as well as an internship program, and we're proud to say that in our learnership program, the absorption rate is sitting at about 66%. So of the 66% of learners who come through, of the number that comes, 66% get absorbed. We have extensive training and development of staff and stakeholders, as highlighted. I have also spoken now about the technical program. Milestone 6, broadening ownership of assets through historically advantaged groups. We do this through licensing and the setting and approving of tariffs and prices in a manner that creates, as indicated, preconditions towards achievement of this milestone. Issuing licenses to eligible applicants to facilitate the meeting of the stated socioeconomic development targets for entities BEE status is considered as part of the criteria for licensing. Also, in some instances, third-party access is a way to ensure participating by historically disadvantaged individuals. We're promoting that. We're also promoting that companies that are owned by historically disadvantaged individuals become competitive. And we also embark on regulatory advocacy to strengthen the powers of the regulator, because particularly with third-party access, it's almost voluntary depending on the incumbent, and we'd like to see the regulator granted more powers to be able to make certain conditions that would facilitate third-party access, particularly of HDSIs. Milestone 10, producing sufficient energy to support the industry at competitive prices, ensuring access for poor households while reducing carbon emissions per unit of power and by about one-third. I have listed some of these issues again in order to avoid repetition, Chair. I'll just skip this one. Yeah. I think on this slide I'll highlight the first bullet, the registration of biodigesters. We have seen an increasing number of projects in rural areas where people are using biomass to meet their thermal and lighting needs. We have registered quite a bit, and we've gone around promoting those particular projects. It's a beautiful collaboration between government entities, because SANEDI is also involved on the other side of that particular program. In electricity, we do ensure that funds are set aside for the electrification cross-subsidy and the implementation of the INEP, and we're promoting energy efficiency in general in the country. Milestone 10, again, I think we have spoken about some of those activities. I think on this slide, I'd just like to highlight the last bullet. We've had a grid code in the country. But once the renewable energy was introduced, we needed to amend the grid code in order to accommodate and take into account the nuances and the uniquenesses of renewable energy. We have since amended the grid code. We have one for wind, and we are continuing to look at the implications for solar-powered plants. I have spoken to these issues that are on this slide. I'll go through. If we then look at the third government program that we take into account, which is the National Infrastructure Plan, from which the strategic implementation projects, infrastructure projects are derived, we participate there in relation to 8, 9, and 10. And again, just to save time, in SIP 8, which is about the green energy and in support of the South African economy, I've highlighted what we've done in relation to the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program, what we do in relation to NEMA. In fact, with the renewable IPPs, we're very proud of the record we've achieved there, because we were able to finalize those processes in less than the stipulated period in terms of the Act. SIP 9, electricity generation to support socioeconomic development. Again, there, We regulate in a manner that facilitates security of supply. We facilitate the conclusion of PPAs between the buyers and the sellers of power in the IPP program. Yes, and the last one, we're doing technical audits to ensure that entities maintain and that they refurbish the infrastructure to improve towards the quality of service. SIP 10 is about electricity transmission and distribution. I've spoken about the issues of set aside for electrification, but importantly, the affordability of electricity pricing through IBTs and the government policy of FBE. We make sure that we facilitate that. In relation to the EDI or the distribution industry, we determine benchmarks and we monitor performance of maintenance of infrastructure against those benchmarks. We audit the implementation of the transmission development plan of ESCOM and ensure that generally compliance with license conditions happens. Now, the fourth government program that we link to as the energy regulator is the National Industry Policy Framework. This, we look at two of those policy outcomes or strategic outcomes, the competition and regulation policies, as well as interventions that give expression to government's commitment to regional economic development. If we look at the policy statement 6, I've referenced all the issues there. Again, the IBTs and the affordability issues, as well as the renewables. Registration of gas importation and production service facilities, very important, as well as indicated the grid code, as well as the amendment of it to account for the new players. Interventions that give expression to government's commitment to regional economic development and integration in Africa. NERSA is a founding and current member of the executive of the African Forum of Utility Regulators. We are also a member of and current chair of the Regional Electricity Regulatory Association of Southern Africa, but I will deal with this later in the presentation, Chair, with your permission. Those are the strategic objectives of NERSA in accordance with the planning framework. So what I've just shown is how our goals fit into government programs, priorities, and policies. Our strategic objectives are to promote energy supply that is certain and secure for current and future users, to create a regulatory environment that facilitates investments in energy infrastructure in particular, to promote competition and competitiveness within the energy industry, to promote regulatory certainty within the energy industry, to promote accessible and energy services for all citizens, as well as to establish NERSA as a credible and reliable regulator. In order to achieve our strategic outcomes and our strategic outcome-oriented goals, we will deliver on the following programs, and these are the programs around which we structure ourselves. The first one is licensing and approving tariffs and prices, licensing and registration, compliance monitoring and enforcement, dispute resolution, setting of rules, as well as establishing the regulator as an efficient and effective entity. Now, if we look at our objectives and which of our programs match those objectives or support the achievement of those objectives, in relation to the first objective of promoting energy supply that is certain and secure, we look at the program around setting and approval of tariffs, the program around licensing and registration, and then compliance monitoring. For the objective of creating a regulatory environment that facilitates investment in energy infrastructure, we look at the program around, again, setting and approval of tariffs, licensing, compliance monitoring, setting of rules, as well as establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator. Promoting competition and competitiveness within the industry, basically setting an approval of tariff, licensing, and registration, which resonates across all our programs or objectives, compliance monitoring, dispute resolution, particularly the dispute resolution that does become quite important, and then the setting of rules and guidelines. Strategic objective of promoting regulatory certainty, setting of rules, setting of tariffs, as well as establishing NERSA as an efficient regulator. Promoting accessible and affordable energy for all citizens. Again, the program of setting and approval of tariffs, licensing, compliance monitoring, and dispute resolution. And the last one, establishing and positioning NERSA as a credible and reliable regulator. The programs are dispute resolution, including mediation, arbitration, and handling of complaints, setting of rules, guidelines, just dealing with efficiency and effectiveness issues for the organization. With that as a context, Chairperson of the committee, we now look at the performance against predetermined objectives. We show our history from 2012-13. up to the current year. So we compare the previous financial year with the current financial year. We'll see at the bottom there, the total, 2012-13, we had achieved 87% of our APP. In the current financial year, we've achieved 90%. We show there what the constraints tend to be, and I think there's a good sign there that the internal constraints increased a little bit, but we're beginning to manage those, and external dependencies increased substantially. If we look at the program performance by industry, as well as other categorizations that we utilize, electricity achieved 95%, piped gas against the six programs, electricity against the six programs, all the programs except for program five, where they hit 83%, piped gas 100% across all the programs. Petroleum pipelines, a mixture, 200%, 83s, and some 50%ers there. We're working with the division to look at overall where what the challenges are there. On the cross-cutting or transversal regulatory issues, as well as organizational issues, we do not have programs, we do not have activities in the other programs other than in program six, and those particular aspects achieved 86 and 75% respectively. If one highlights the key achievements in relation to each industry now and each of the sectors. Out of the 186 municipal and private distributor tariffs, we approved 182. It might as well be that in some instances the reason for the differential is that of the 186, not all municipalities distribute for themselves, so they ask others to distribute for them, so that might account for the difference in the numbers there. We've dealt with the ESCOM programs, the retail tariff, ERTSA, schedule of standard tariffs, regulatory financial reports. The city of Cape Town and the city of Tshwane, of the metros and the top 10 municipalities we targeted for the regulatory reporting framework implementation are the two that have moved quite far in responding to that. What we've also done is to approve a consultation paper for electricity tariffs charged by resellers in order for us to be able to set guidelines. I'm sure committee members would know people who live in townhouses and know that the electricity tariffs they pay completely different from what the municipalities or ESCOM charge, and there is no framework at the moment, and we have found space in the way the Act is written as the regulator to come in and start regulating that. So we are currently in a consultation process for that. Like we have held the hearings. We're now finalizing the framework. We dealt with all 17 renewable energy generation licenses under the third round of the DOE, finalized. We granted 5 generation licenses, 2 distribution licenses, and 1 distribution connection facility license. And we have dealt with a number of amendments to generation licenses, matter of course. In electricity industry regulation, other issues that we dealt with, we conducted a preliminary investigation into the load shedding of the 6th of March 2014. We've completed the audit of the ESCOM Integrated Demand Management Program. We published a report on trends regarding the status of complaints in the electricity industry. We've looked at the systems adequacy report, and we published it for the financial for the period 2013. We've participated again on a number of programs, and we've participated on the stakeholder engagement program on cross-border trading, because that issue is going to become big in our lives. The SADC has taken a decision around an integrated energy market, electricity market. Cross-border trading is going to become a big issue, and we keep an active involvement in that particular area. If we look at the piped gas industry, we approved maximum prices. Now, the importance of us mentioning the fact that we approved maximum prices for Spring Light Gas, Novo, as well as Sasol last year, up until 25 March 2014, there was a special dispensation for regulating maximum prices of gas, with Sasol having exclusivity for that period. That period came to an end. We have approved the maximum price for Sasol, but we've now approved it for other players in that space. Springlights Gas is one of them, as well as Novo. We've looked at maximum prices for Greenfields customers, distributors and regulators, as well as Brownfields customers. The difference between Greenfields and Brownfields: Greenfields is a new project. Brownfields is where it's an infield, is an existing project, and in a certain part of the value chain, somebody comes in, and we've dealt with those as well. We've looked at Romco tariffs, as we are expected to, in terms of the agreement. Compliance and monitoring. We have done a number of investigations in relation to complaints that were received by customers, particularly customers of Sasol. Some of them were legacy from the special dispensation special regulatory dispensation period, and we have concluded most of those, and now we will be dealing with the complaints in the new regime of regulation. At a high level, there's the ratio there, but we like mentioning the fact that Riatilet Gas Trade was granted a license to trade in gas in 14 areas in the Gauteng province. It's important because it's an HDFI entity and the 100% empowered company, and it's beginning to show growth in that particular space. There's also CNG Holdings that has launched the second phase of its gas for vehicles project. The first one was in the Ebrulen area. The second one is in the Joburg area in Langlachte. We've licensed this entity to continue with that particular activity. Petroleum pipelines, industry, those are the issues there. The big entity we regulate in that space is Transnet Pipelines. We granted them an increase of 5.08 in the allowable revenue. Chevron created a first there where they developed a pipeline for themselves, and they were also given an increase in their allowable revenue. We've done the tariffs for pipeline storage and networks. 62% of all licenses currently comply with all the regulatory reporting requirements. We're moving quite fast in that particular space of converting entities to comply with the regulatory reporting requirements. We have had an experience with this particular sector that we regulate where a lot of people would conduct unlicensed activities, or activities that, properly speaking, should be licensed under the Petroleum Pipelines Act, and they were not licensed. 154 of the 202 inspections in the year under review were deemed to be licensable. So in some instances, the fact that entities are not licensed is not necessarily a deliberate infringement of the law. There are debates and the issues of definitions of what activities are being conducted at the various facilities, and we have upped our inspection levels. And the one thing we have seen, an emerging trend that we have noticed as the regulators, that other regulators are now refusing to give their licenses unless entities can show either a license from NERSA or confirmation that that activity is not licensable by NERSA. So again, there our advocacy and our relationship creation is bearing some fruit for us. In relation to transversal regulatory issues, the organization hosted the second South African Energy Regulators Conference in March this year. We approved a framework for conducting a regulatory impact assessment, and now this is the ex post regulatory impact assessment. As an organization, we want to review what our impact has been on the economy over the last 7 years. We've also approved a report harmonizing methodologies within the organization. Cooperation with other entities, cooperation with other regulators is very important for us, and in this instance, we're happy to report that, in fact, the memorandum of understanding with the NNR, the nuclear regulator, has been gazetted. So it's been signed and gazetted. Under organizational issues, the big development for us in the year under review was the appointment of a new part-time regulator members by the minister. So the chairperson, who's here, deputy chairperson, and another member, Mr. Sibanda, who are not here, were newly appointed, and Ms. Mtimunye, the chair of the audit committee who's here with us, was reappointed. We had a vacancy of a full-time regulator member for the regulation of gas, and an individual who used to be an executive manager for piped gas regulation within NERSA was then appointed as the full-time regulator member for gas, created a lot of confidence and excitement within the organization. An unqualified audit for 9 consecutive years. For the first time since our inception, 95% of the org structure is filled. We also participated as NERSA and as chair of RERA in what is called a high-level meeting of regulatory energy associations of emerging markets. What that essentially is that what we have noticed is that first world and the second world, as they are called, tend to have their own regulators, energy regulators round tables. And as emerging markets, we've then decided to establish a similar thing. So in this high-level meeting, we have Africa, South America, Eastern Europe, and the Mediterranean region as emerging markets, because our issues are slightly different to those of developed markets as regulators. And when we hosted that as NERSA and participated in it, those pictures don't quite relate to that. That's the 2013 AGM of RERA, which we'll talk about later. At this point, Chairperson, with your permission, I'm going to hand over to the CFO to take the committee through the financial performance of the organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, CEO. On this slide, I'd like to highlight the amount of levies that NERSA has collected for the year under review. We've collected a total amount of 226 million rands, which have been received from the electricity industry, 127 million, the pipe gas industry, 51.9 million, and the petroleum industry, 47 million. And I will go through the details on the comparing the levies to the budgeted amounts on slide 65. The actual expenditure for the year under review amounted to 227 million, which represents a 10% underspending when compared to the budget amount of 252. NERSA has a cash flow mitigation reserve to enable the entity to fulfill its financial obligations where we have an event where the approval of the levies is slightly delayed. The cash flow mitigation reserve is basically 3 months of our employment costs, which is kept in a investment fund reserved for that. Our commitments for the year under review total an amount of 27 million rand, which is commitments for expenditure that has been contracted for, but the service has not yet been received or the invoices have not yet been received. On the next slide, we have the expenditure for each of the programs that the CEO has outlined in slide number 50. This shows the expenditure for each project, and most of the projects came in line with their budgeted amounts. On the next slide, my apologies, Chairperson, we've had to make some amendments to the slide that was printed. The net surplus for NERSA for the current year is 4315 million, as reflected in the annual report. And in total, we have expenditure of 227 compared to the budgeted amount of 252, which results in the underspend of 10 million. That has been previously mentioned. Okay, the expenditure, So our levy income was 226, as mentioned. Our budgeted amount was 236, which resulted in a 4.1% under recovery on the levies, and this is mainly due to the electricity industry and the petroleum industry having volumes that were lower than what was budgeted for. the expenditure themselves, I will go through the main ones being the employment costs. As you can see, our employment costs was under budget, mainly due to the vacancy rate throughout the year. Even though the vacancy rate was 95% at the end of the year, it varied during the year. The facilities under expenditure mainly due to lower spending as we are awaiting approval of our refurbishment project. The next key line would be your professional fees. Professional fees were underspent by 29%, mainly due to about two projects which were delayed, being the organizational review and the IT system for the implementation of the regulatory reporting manuals, which have been rolled forward to the following year. And this line also includes some savings as a result of the cost containment measures that have been received from National Treasury. Our travel and accommodation, once again, has been underspent by 12.5%, and that is mainly due to the cost containment measures by Treasury as we are regarded to, as we actually expected to ensure that the spending on travel is lower. This results in our net surplus for the year being 4315, and that's it. On the next slide, Chair, we just show the breakdown per industry of the levy income, but I think I've covered that. So the under recovery on electricity and petroleum was mainly due to the volumes that were less for the two industries. On the next slide, we have a comparison of our operating expenditure to budget, but also we show what the total funds that are received by NERSA, what the amounts are spent on. So we have three major categories of spend, being the employment costs, which constitute 62% of our total expenditure. We have travel, accommodation, and training being the next category of spend. We are a knowledge-based entity, therefore we invest in the training of our staff. That represents the 12% of our spend. And then the next one is our professional fees. Again, consists of a higher percentage of spend. And the actual spend is very much in line with the budgeted patterns of spend. On the next slide, we have our balance sheet. The yellow section represents the current assets, and as you can see, there was a slight increase in our current assets, mainly due to the increase to our cash on hand due to the surpluses received from industry, which will then be paid back to the industry in the following year. The non-current assets that would represent our property, plant and equipment, which mainly constitutes of our land and buildings, and this was revalued during the current year, hence the increase that's shown on the non-current assets. Under current liabilities, we have a slight increase again on current liabilities, which is mainly due to all the year-end payments that were made in the following month, relating mainly to the employment costs. On the next slide, Chair, we've got our cash flow statement, which shows that which demonstrates that NERSA has sufficient funds available to meet our normal and future capital projects and operating expenditure. Our opening balance was a figure of 84 million, with the closing balance being 97 million. And the main contributors to the movement between the opening and closing balance was mainly the receipts from our levy income and payments to our suppliers. On the next slide, Chair, we've got an amount of zero, for irregular expenditure not yet condoned. The amount for fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounted to 5,475, mainly relating to interest that has been charged on late payments of invoices. We have put measures in place to ensure that all payments are made on time and to avoid any interest being charged on late payments. We also have an email address where all invoices are sent by suppliers and are then logged by the finance system to ensure that all payments are made on time. On key capital projects, the energy regulator resolved in 2012 that they would remain in their current premises. However, some major upgrades are needed to be conducted on the building. The following slide shows the costs that have been spent on the building and are also planned for the next financial year. For the current financial year, for 2013-14, we spent an amount of $6.4 million. We've installed a standby generator, fire escape waterproofing, and the main expenditure being the lifts, which have had to be upgraded by $2 million. So we've spent a total of $6.3 million. For the current year, which is 2014-15, we are spending another $1 million on the lifts, which are then being finalized, the service lift, and we will be installing metal detectors. And these are the smaller projects that have already been conducted, but a full refurbishment project is still being reviewed and going through the relevant approvals within the organization. The Audit and Risk Committee, I think, will be covered in detail by the presentation from the ARC chairperson. And I will move to the checks and balances that have been implemented in the SCM system to ensure compliance at all times. We've got an approved supply chain management policy and procedures that are in place. We are also reviewing our policy on an annual basis to ensure that it remains up to date. The SCM officials are currently undergoing security clearance, and all relevant information has been submitted to the authorities. We've got a standing bid adjudication committees, which are in place, with the relevant approval authorities being allocated or being delegated to each committee. And all amounts above 10 million rand of expenditure then need to be approved by the energy regulator. And that's all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
With your permission, we'll now move towards concluding this presentation. The audit outcomes will be covered by the chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee. I will just present some of the staffing issues as well as some of the international activities that we participate in. Staff demographic profiles, you'd see there by race on the left-hand side, and the gender profile, 54% female, 46% male. We don't believe, Chair, that the male species is endangered. On our staff analysis, Chair, the one issue that we possibly want to highlight, and Member Khreleng will recall that we have been dragged on this issue year in, year out. We have now been able to employ three people with disabilities after not meeting this target for years on end. And, Chair, in fact, one of them is an African woman, CA, who's a junior accountant in the organization, and we're very proud of those people. In terms of international activities, Chair, we had indicated that NERSA is the current chairperson of the SADC, Association of Regulators. The objectives of RERA is to ensure capacity building and information sharing amongst regulators in the region, the facilitation of the electricity supply industry policy, legislation, and regulations, and to ensure regulatory or enhance regulatory cooperation. Members of RERA, it's SADC countries in the main, so you'll see all the way from A to Z there. and there's a map that reflects that there are three remaining countries in SADC that do not have regulators, but the processes are afoot for the creation of those regulators. We are aware, for instance, that Botswana is currently in the process of finalizing their legislation that would establish the regulator and the new industry, configured industry in Botswana. The DRC are in the beginning, at the beginning points of looking at their industry. And although Mauritius is a fairly developed market, they've just taken a little bit long to establish the regulator, but we also know that they are in the process of establishing their regulator. Chair, we thought that we won't bore you with slides at points. We'll just show you, this was the 10th anniversary of RERA in Namibia. That's the Deputy Minister of Energy of Namibia. That's the Executive Secretary, the CEO of RERA. And some members of the Portfolio Committee might know this individual, the former CEO of NERSA, who was also acknowledged on the night. This is the retired CEO of the Electricity Control Board of Namibia as a founding member. And this is a member of the regulator of the Zimbabwean Energy Regulatory Authority, Chair. The African Forum, so now that was the SADC region, and at the African Forum, at the African level, AU level, we are members of the AFUR EXCO, and we chair one of the energy sectoral committees. AFUR has similar objectives to RERA, but the difference is that they do it at a continental level and multi-sectoral level. So AFUR focuses on all regulated infrastructure, energy, telecommunications, transport, water, and sanitation. Objectives, again, information sharing, capacity building, and harmonization of regulatory policies and legislation. In 2015, South Africa will be hosting AFUR in this beautiful part of the country in the Western Cape, and we hope members of the Portfolio Committee will attend. Chair, for both associations, the desired end state is that AFUR will be a continental regulator, and SADC, RERA, would be a regional regulator to deal with cross-border trading issues and those issues that relate to cooperation and integration around energy issues. There's the diagram, map, and the countries that are part of AFUR. And, Chair, we do cooperate and we enjoy excellent working relationships with a number of entities and other bilateral structures, the African Union, the SADC Secretariat, the Southern African Power Pool, the International Confederation of Energy Regulators, the Council of European Energy Regulators, the Energy Regulators Association ERA of Eastern Europe, ECOWAS, Western Africa, and as indicated, we have now established a roundtable of emerging market energy regulators. And those pictures are from a roundtable of AFUR where the future and structure of AFUR was being discussed and debated. In conclusion, Chairperson, we'd like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to present our annual report. We believe that we continue to grow from strength to strength since our inception. The results of the work that we do continue to have a profound impact on the lives of ordinary people in the country as well as the economy. The regulation of the three energy industries characteristically continue to pose challenges in that the energy regulator is required to balance the conflicting interests of licensees, investors, consumers, and the policymakers. We do believe that in the year under review, 2013-14, we have achieved our mandate, and we indicated that we've achieved 90% of our target. The staff turnover has stabilized over the years, and last year was one of those where we had a minimum. We are a viable entity, and we continue to operate as a going concern, and to deal with the regulatory challenges that we meet. We have undertaken various initiatives to refine our regulatory practices and methodologies, and this we do in the quest of being the world-class leader in energy regulation, and we will continue to do so. Chairperson, I thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Chair.
All right. Honorable Chair, we now are going to have a presentation from the Chair of the Audit Committee, Ms. Ntimunye.
Just wait for the presentation to be loaded. Okay. I'm Kumucho Ntimunye. I chair the Audit Committee of NERSA. The presentation will be outlined in the following way. I'll give you some background, what our duties and responsibilities are, what activities we've undertaken during the year, our activities as the monitoring the activities of the energy regulator, and some information on what happened during the annual audit. As a background, the Audit Committee of NERSA was established when NERSA was established in 2005. We've got four members, two from the energy regulator and two external members. And we have the Chief Executive Officer, the Chief Audit Executive, the Chief Financial Officer, the Auditor General, and the Chairperson of the Energy Regulator as the invitees to our meeting. This just gives you an indication of who we are and what our qualifications are. As part of our charter, the Audit Committee has to have sufficient skills to take out the responsibilities assigned to them. And as part of NERSA, there's a formal induction process which provides members with sufficient briefing about their roles and performances in place for all members. We also have a training plan for all our committee members. And we also have a comprehensive developmental plan on regulatory issues. Our responsibilities and the duties that we do in relation to our audit and risk charter. We, amongst other things, we review the effectiveness of internal control systems, the effectiveness of the internal audit function. We also look at the risk areas to be covered in the scope of the internal and external audit. We also evaluate the adequacy, reliability, and accuracy of the financial and performance information. We also monitor compliance with the laws and regulations. The activities that we've undertaken during the year, we've reviewed all findings from internal and external audit, and we've also reviewed the comments from management and also reviewed the agreed action plans. We've approved the risk management policies and procedures and monitored the implementation thereof. We've also approved the combined assurance plan. We've also approved the compliance framework, and we continue to maintain oversight over the status of compliance with legislation and the regulations. We also reviewed the audited annual financial statement, the report on performance against predetermined objectives, and the annual report. We've also reviewed the Auditor General's interim and final management reports for the year. Our activities in relation to our monitoring role, we monitor compliance, and through that we've approved a comprehensive compliance framework, and we monitor on a quarterly basis the implementation thereof. We also monitor the activities of the internal control system, risk management, and governance processes to ensure that they are effective. We also check the implementation of key drivers of on internal control in financial statements and predetermined objectives. We also monitor the quality of quarterly reports, and we are satisfied with the internal controls that management has put in place to generate the quarterly report. And also, we also provide assurance that the internal audit function provides us with assurance that the information is reliable and accurate. We also evaluate the financial statements before they get to the Auditor General. And the AG has commended us for submitting financial statements timely without their material misstatements. For the current year, NERSA throughout the year has never received a qualified opinion. During the current year, we did not have any significant or material non-compliance issues in the audit report. We received a clean audit. We had 6 findings in our management report, 4 of which were important and 2 were administrative. As management has committed to continuously improve the internal control environment, and this is shown by the reduction in audit findings. Last year we had 18, this year we had 6. And we've implemented all the agreed action plans on the findings from the AG from last year. And that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much, Nersa, for the presentation. We're supposed to hear questions from honorable members. See, according to the program, we just 5 minutes ahead of time, so maybe it's a good time to break for something, coffee, tea. There's anything at the back there, so and no, that is prohibited. 10 minutes. Honorable Low, welcome. Honorable Estes, Honorable Mabunda,
you, Chair. Three issues. One on leadership and internship program. The report says it is at 60%. Can the CEO elaborate as to whether when are you going to achieve the 100%? Number two, Chair, it is with regard to the report says they've reduced a vacancy rate at, to 5%. And can the CEO elaborate on that? On the vacancy rate being reduced to 5%. The last one, Chair, it is with regard to, we heard from newspapers that NERSA has increased tariffs, the 12% tariffs, to ESCOM. We just want some clarity because it is actually confusing. As we're doing our constituency work, where some of us, in fact, were failing to clarify some of the issues because it was a confusing situation where we were. Can you get some clarity with regard to that? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Helen.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, and just in case I get accused of jumping on the ANC's question, just to say that, I mean, I had written to you before. Oh, turn that one off. Oh, no, that one's on, that one. Okay.
Sorry. Another one for earlier.
Yes.
Yesterday ended at 12 midnight.
No, sir.
No rollovers.
No, good. I don't hold grudges. No, just to say that I had written to you before to call Nursa to come to us, and so I am abusing this slightly, but as my colleague did say, we have been inundated with requests to explain this latest price increase. Now, I know that it's part of the regulatory clearing accounts, and that you have the authority to, in fact, award that extra increase based on the revenue that Eskom has and prudent costs and things like that. What some people have suggested, though, that in terms of doing that, there needed to be some kind of participatory process, and people feel like their views haven't been taken into account. So I'm just wondering if you're going to be running any kind of a participatory process around that. But then secondly, the real issue around this, and I know Nursa feels quite strong too, so it would be good to get a proper document from you to explain fully your reasons why you've awarded the extra 4% increase to, I think, 12%. Because the sense that we get, and certainly the sense that the public has, is that these increases are due to ballooning costs at Eskom, some of which haven't been prudently incurred, such as running the diesel generators at far more capacity than they were allowed for by Nursa, you know, the delays at Medupi, all of those type of things. And consumers are rightfully feeling like they are now being forced to pay for the inefficiencies at Eskom. If you can give some comment on that and then also provide us with some documentation that can fully outline all your reasonings behind this latest price increase, because I think it is a very, very important issue out there. And also whether, in fact, we can expect more increases next year as well, because I think, as far as I understand, it's only for this period now, only for the one-year period that it goes up to 12%. But do you expect that Eskom will come back to you to argue for a further increase at a later stage? And then secondly, the other issue that's also been, well, it hasn't been burning, but it should be burning, is the issue of the BHP bulletin deal. Now, I know I brought this up about a year and a half ago, I think it was, and at the time you said that you were having lawyers look at this issue. But it has been about 2 years now that it's been sitting on Nursa's desk, and we do need some answers as to what course of action, in fact, you will be taking around this. You said you were going to run some participatory process, I think, around it. If you can give us some timelines as to when you expect some kind of an answer or outcome with regards to the BHP bulletin deals. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Lo.
Thank you, Chair. I think for me, Chair, I just have a few questions and observations. At first it was very torturous to when I listened to the presentation. What I would expect from the presentation to outline is the short, medium, and long-term goals. Because they come and present to us, we have heard the strategic plans and all of those things. We have heard that, but what we also want to see, of what I like to see, and it will determine how I do my oversight on Nursa, if they give the short, medium, and long-term goals also outlined in the presentation. And then what I also would like to see on the staffing, Khaled's are only and Indians are only represented 2 and 1. What is your plans to at least balance those figures? In that regard. And then you have vacancies. What is your plans to sort out that 5% vacancy rate that you are currently having there? And then the last one on your technical audits and so forth. Do you give the company that you are going to audit, do you give them time frames to sort out the deviations of findings out, and do they give you feedback on that? And then if you can also at least when you're coming to present also incorporate that, or you can forward some of the findings that you do pick up on your technical orders. Thank you very much.
Another word, please. Thank you, Chair.
For me, what raises the issue of Mirza's independence to pursue the board public interest, which is its purpose, it was actually mentioned by the Honourable Freiland just now as well. Mirza, last year, Mirza rejected the increase higher than 8%. It's unjustified and a burden on the consumers. But now the shortfall for Eskom, you want to make up in 1 year. It could have been staggered. I mentioned it yesterday in a meeting as well. This could have been staggered over a longer period. This put a very big strain on the already cash-strapped consumer in this country. February last year, it announced it allowed a 3% real return on the additional capital to be invested by Eskom and Medupi and elsewhere. Also, this just escalated. Eskom should control the escalating debt better. There's better cost controls while Eskom could improve their cash flow and could make nurses' jobs easier. You also mentioned the gas control. Just down the road here in Saldanha Bay, there's two main players there fighting over licenses that was acquired from Mercer. There's two main players there. My handwriting is so terrible. Sunrise. Oh, sorry, I said a little swear word. Sorry, I apologize. Sunrise Energy and Avidia Energy. They both now are in fights with each other, and nobody is winning in this battle. And at the end, the consumer, especially here in the Western Cape, or the users are paying terrible prices from smaller players like Afrox and those people. And NERSA should be able to control this and put an end to this. I'd say if Eskom could sell off some of its underperforming assets, it would not only help the, and avoid the more debt, but it also would be more important to lead to a more efficient operation and lower electricity costs, which NERSA should look after. Everyone pushes for renewable energy, but 1,600 megawatt of renewable energy cannot be connected to the grid. Although Eskom is already paying 2 million rand a month for this, because they haven't got the transmission lines up yet, and they will still be paying this for another 10 months or more until it can be connected. And this is NERSA's role. They should be involved in this, in these things. Thank you. This is okay. Another one that I think that I see here also. This diesel generators, and it was also mentioned by the Honorable Greyland, this diesel generators that still run, this is an emergency generators, that still, the trucks can't keep up to deliver diesel there. They run 24/7 because of the lack of unplanned maintenance through Eskom, and it's costing the, NERSA has actually said that they only allow, I can't remember the exact figure, but it was double that, what Eskom has spent on. So what steps are you as NERSA going to take on this? It was double what you allowed for Eskom for diesel, what I've used.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me first appreciate the presentations from NERSA. I have got two or more questions. The first question goes to the presentation that says you are conducting a public participation. As NERSA. As far as I understand, public participation means people will come and make their own comments and suggestions. My question is, how do you, or how did you conduct your public participation? Do we have a tangible inputs from public wherein they were even registered their names and their interests during that particular exercise or event? Secondly, the presentation spoke about the girl child program, to say it's a national program, but it's centered in Pretoria. I think this reminds me of Mzwakhe Mbule's song in some of the national government institutions were centered in Pretoria in the past. Centralized in Pretoria, how national is it if it can't reach the rural areas, but it is called national? Maybe we need to be clarified on that, because it is my belief that this program is very important also to assist or to take on board those children who have got the capacity, but they are from very far from Pretoria as the central place. Maybe even the criteria thereof as to how do you identify those children. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Something that says from birth certificate to death certificate. Chair.
I think. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members for their questions. There's a few questions that we'll deal with either as they come, or in fact I think the CEO will deal with them as they come, as they were raised. It's probably easier to deal with them as they were raised. However, I just want to preface the answers to the question by saying, Honourable Chair, that with your permission, we are quite happy to have a more detailed session with the committee to deal with this latest price increase, with the regulatory clearing account and those sort of manner. However, we will deal with some of the questions that were asked, but we would like an opportunity to have a more detailed presentation to you. I think today we don't have a regulatory member responsible for electricity. He's not here with us, and I think he would give a little bit more insight over and above the insight we'll give today. So, with your permission, we will address the questions. However, the detail, we will deal with them at the session if you do require of us to do so. So the first two questions, there was a question of leadership from Honorable Matlala, vacancy. I don't know if you don't want to deal with those. You've got them. Yeah. And then I just want to add something on the ESCOM tariff, okay, when you get to it.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. On the questions from Honorable Matlala, the one was learnerships and internships, and where I pointed out that our absorption rate on the learnerships was 66%. The plan is not to absorb all the learners because we do not necessarily require the skills that come through the learnership program all the time at any given point. So a 66% absorption rate is generally very high because a learnership is just to expose somebody to a learning program, and they must then go and find work elsewhere. But we were able to absorb 66% of that. The plan is not to drop it from 66%, but we could never take the 100% because it's not all the skills that are on the learnership program that we require as an organization at any given point in time. In terms of the vacancy rate, I hope I understood the question about, and the question is, why do you still have a vacancy rate at all? We would have a vacancy rate because the skills in our industry are very mobile, particularly us as a regulator, very mobile. So regulation as a discipline in this country is nascent, is new, and all regulators are looking for staff. We're all competing for the same pool of people. Secondly, we can only train regulators in action when they do the work. There's no course or law or school where people train to become regulators. So we produce them as they do the work. And once they are 2, 3, 4 years, they're experienced, both the licensees and other regulators are looking for them. So the mobility of skill in our area is very high. And at 5%, we're doing very well because people will always resign. People will always resign. One of the vacancies we're sitting with is somebody that took over 2 years to recruit, and the person lasted 18 months, and they went back to industry. They went back to an oil company. There is no way we can compete with those salaries. So we're not making an excuse, but and we endeavor to keep vacancies to zero. But at 5%, our sense is that, in fact, as an organization, we've come very far. There was a point where we had a big turnover rate and big vacancy rates. The third question, Honorable Matlala, related to the increase in ESCOM, and this is where the chairperson would want to come in. Do you want to
start? Yeah, I think the CEO will provide details. I just wanted to preface it by saying this, that as a regulator, we have come up with what is called the MYPD, which is multi-year price determination. What that says is we're dealing with the future. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen in the next 2 years, 3 years, and that sort of thing. And you'll see it's a multi-year price determination. And it's done so to ensure that you get regulatory certainty in the market. It's done so that you don't have this sort of annual price determinations that are not certain and that sort of thing. Now, because of that, because we always deal with the future, the methodology allows us as a regulator to take account of reality, of what actually happens in those actual years where the MIPD has been implemented. And that's why we have this regulatory clearing account and that sort of thing. And they, I think the CEO will deal with explaining some of the details of the increases. I know that in the press, as you correctly say, it says 12%. In reality, it is not. When I say it's not, I mean this. 8% had already been approved over MYP or over the next 5 years, which the CEO will go through in detail. All that we added was a 4%, and I think the CEO can explain a little bit more detail how this worked and the numbers involved. Do you want to deal with them in detail?
Thank you, Chair. Essentially, the regulatory clearing account was a facility created in the MYPD methodology and rules to be able to deal with over and under recovery, given that the MYPD determination is done on projections, as the chairperson has indicated. So I think for starters, it's important that we clarify that this was an amount that related from the MYPD 2 period, that ESCOM made an application for it to be granted in its favor. ESCOM's application was actually for 18 billion to be granted in its favor from the MYPD too. And NERSA sat down, made an analysis, and some of the costs were deemed not prudent, and the amount was reduced to 7.8 billion, which would have an effect of an extra 4% on now the MYPD-3 determination, which was done via public participation process. The reason why it was all allowed to be recovered in 1 year, amongst other things that the regulator considered, was that the outer year of the MYPD-2 was the 1 year where there was a big variation between budgeted or projected and actual. That is the year the committee would recall that ESCOM requested that their increases be reduced from 25% to 16%, 24.75% to 16%. But that's the year, again, they spent a lot of diesel at their OCGTs, 10 billion instead of 3 billion that was allowed. And therefore, as a regulator, we thought that given that the highest amount of deviation was in 1 year compared to the other 2 years of the MYPD-2, it would be logical for us to grant it in 1 year. It could have been spread over the years. We did look at the impact thereof, and our sense was that it would be better to allow this to come through in 1 year so that you keep the 8% MYPD-3 determination consistent over the rest of the remainder of the period. However, even the MYPD-3 has got an RCA facility, and it would be looked at over the years, and the regulator will still decide whether the refunds will happen right at the end of the five-year period, or should we rather look at effecting them throughout the year. So what happened this time around was not a reopener. If ESCOM intends to reopen MYPD-3, they would have to make an application to the regulator, and that would be subjected to a public participation process. The public participation process for an RCA balance has got a threshold that's contained in the rules. So if members of the public were worried about the RCA being decided behind closed doors, we made the rule, and the rule says if it is less than 10% of the total revenue, the regulator doesn't need to engage in a public participation process. So in terms of the rules acting in accordance with the rules, that's why it was handled in the manner that it was handled. And if the feedback is that NERSA go relook that, we are happy to do that, but we had done it in order to try and maintain some efficiency in the process. But the rules have got to serve people, and if this rule doesn't serve the public, we can possibly relook it. But again, Chair, this is an issue that I would request that we deal with in more detail when we have brought the electricity team to the portfolio committee, and the discussion is just around electricity. We just thought that at a high level we would indicate those issues to the committee, but that further detail and further discussions and debates and very detailed issues can be dealt with at that time. We did approve a decision, reasons for decision for the RCA for MYPD-2. So, Chairperson, that will be sent immediately to yourself and the committee members, so that the committee members can study the document and see how we got to our decision. But it is very detailed, and we clarified every step of the way as we went through the numbers as a regulator. If I then move to the questions raised by Member Freyler, and I've dealt with some of those that relate to the RCA, the billeting matter, it's one of those that has taken much longer than we thought, but the big challenge was that people took each other to court, and at some point we're subjected to court timelines. We are in a position now that the court processes at least have reached some finality on those issues that were challenged. We are, as a regulator, looking at the matter. I'm not able to give you the timelines from the top of my head, but that also can be sent to the committee in writing. But I am aware that at the next electricity subcommittee, there's some report that's going to go through on this matter, and possibly the public participation process will be either towards the end of the year or in the new year, because generally December is not a good period to consult. So yes, the public participation aspect will still be retained on that particular process. The question and comments from Member Lowe, we will in future indicate the different time spans of the work that we do, short, medium, and long term. However, as a regulator, the work we do is sort of set, and it's fairly conveyor belt. So
it will be in, we'll have to approve licenses over time. But that there are aspects around the organizational design, around organizational aspirations, and that are medium-term and long-term, and we will indicate those when we do come back. Vacancy plans, do we, vacancy rate, do we have plans to minimize and eliminate? Yes, we do. Eliminate is one of those that we will endeavor, but minimize is one that we can do and we are doing. And the vacancy rate issue is so important in the organization. It's monitored at the Human Resource Committee of the Energy Regulator. It is somebody's KPI. So if they do not meet this, it sums in money. So it's an important aspect, and we have tried to improve some of the process challenges that we have had as an organization around those issues. Technical audits, yes, we do give the licensees time frames for them to respond to us. The technical audits are nice because they're also linked to the type of tariff increase we give to municipalities. So we'd go find a problem and the municipal says, we need more money to be able to do this, so give us an above average tariff increase. And once they get to that point, then they come in under our very big microscope of close monitoring. And we monitor it so well that if in the period that they stipulated in their corrective plan, they haven't done what they said, we plow the money back in another period. We can submit these reports to the committee. They do make for very interesting reading. We will chairperson either bring them when we come for the electricity presentation, or alternatively we can send them ahead of time. We have a phased approach in which we do the technical audits, and the municipalities that we've done that we finished, but it's a continuous process that we are engaged in. I think, Chairperson, the question from Member Esther Raisin about the shortfall being made up in 1 year, I've explained when I dealt with the question as raised by Member McClellan. We also agree with the statement that Eskom should control its debt and its costs much better. That's what we are seeking to do through the manner in which we are regulating them. And we do say that, however, at points they do need to be assisted, because particularly with debt, once debt increases, that becomes a pass-through in the tariff, so we are also concerned about those aspects. In relation to the gas issues that Member Feiling raised, the matter of Sunrise and Avidia, the Energy Regulator Act, as well as the Petroleum Pipelines Act, is very clear around the criteria that entities must meet to be issued a license. In this particular instance, both applicants met the criteria, and in terms of the Act, NERSA issued licenses. We are aware of the contestation between the two parties. We do not call it a dispute yet. However, a part of it is natural firm behavior. They are looking at the market, they're going to compete in this market, and they are dealing with their prospective competition in the way that they choose to deal with it. We have taken trouble as a regulator to deal with these matters, both these matters, in a very cautious manner, and we're comfortable that our decisions have been arrived at in terms of the laws that regulate that industry, and any other matter we will then have to deal with as it comes. The matter of Eskom and selling its underperforming assets, it's a matter for policymakers. As a regulator, we cannot dictate. However, if the policymakers do decide to unbundle Eskom and effect that type of proposal, as a regulator, we then have to shape ourselves and ready ourselves to deal with the different-looking Eskom. However, it's not a matter that we can comment on as a regulator. The fourth question around renewable energy and whether or not the megawatts from renewable energy have been connected to the grid. Our information is NERSA. In terms of the applications that we approved, all the IPPs provided us with copies of their agreements with Eskom for connection to the grid. In instances where they've had to build, we have given them licenses to build the infrastructure, but in all the instances, they showed us their agreements with Eskom and or the municipalities where they were going to connect. We have seen the story in the newspapers, but we're not sure where the journalists got their facts. At least, at the very least, as the regulator, we are quite comfortable that they approved up to window 3 renewable megawatts. Those have been connected to the grid. If not, it's a question of project implementation, not because Eskom has refused to give entities space on the transmission line. The diesel generators, so we are also worried about the issue of the over utilization of the OCGTs by Eskom. And we have monitored the situation very closely. And a big part of the RCA was informed by that observation. In fact, our own observations, because we get a systems report every day as the regulator, we have noticed that there's been a drop in the utilization of the OCGTs by ESCOM. So we are encouraging them to do so. We have been in contact with them. As soon as we saw the utilization go up, we warned them. And we have been observing it quite closely. It's not ideal, but as a regulator, we'll deal with it on the basis of prudency, and we have started showing how we will deal with it going forward. If I go to the questions posed by Honorable Mabunda, apologies. How does the public participation process at work at NERSA? Up until a particular point, we used to run all public participation processes in our building. But with the big decisions that we take, we hold public participation processes or hearings across the country. So all 9 provinces, we will go there. We try and utilize points that are central in the CBDs of municipalities. Yes, people apply to make presentations, but we do relax processes where people who haven't applied in terms of our timelines say show up in the morning of the presentation and they say, we've now decided to make a presentation. We do allow people to make presentations. Normally, we expect people to make written presentations, but there are people who prefer to do oral presentations because in certain communities, conversations are conducted by oral presentation and not through paper. So we do allow people to do that. I do, however, want to point out that when we ran the public consultation processes for MYPD3, we learned a lot, and we will be improving our own processes. So one of the issues was the time at which we hold these public hearings. 11 o'clock for ordinary workers doesn't work because they will not be released from work to come and participate. So we will relook the time. Also, the format of the public hearings. As I say, in other communities, people prefer to talk in what is called the town hall style of talking, as opposed to how we tend to expect people to do it, which is the bioscope, PowerPoint presentation, effects, and those types of things. And language, people are allowed to use language of their choice. We also have interpreters, including a sign language interpreter, when we hold our public hearings. We do register participants. We have the registers. There are ladies who guard that book like hawks. We do have registers. We can prove public participation throughout our history. As I say, we do realize that there's always room for improvement, and this is one area where we relook in to ensure that at the very least we deal with the types of issues that were raised with the MYPD3 participation. In fact, the one point that was raised was the venues. So when we went to Eastern Cape, we went to some place next to the coast, and people said, why do you bring it in leafy suburbs? And it's a point we take. We will not hold the hearings in leafy suburbs. Town halls are accessible by anybody, and we will endeavor to make sure that we do them in the CBDs, preferably using municipal facilities where we can. So those are some of the issues of how we deal with the public participation progress. As I say, it's one of those that we continuously improving. On the technical question, the national character of the program stems from the fact that it's a program run by a consulting entity called UESO. The program has been endorsed by the UN. In the country, it's been endorsed by the former Department of Children, People with Disabilities, and Youth, and now the Ministry of Women and Social Development and in the presidency. The Department of Energy has endorsed this program and has called on all its entities to implement it. However, the design of the people who implement the program is that they would want to have employers across the country who are willing to participate. They do tend to target employers in particular areas and to make it workable for young children who are in grade 9 to be able to go to work every day. They then try and get employers and schools within a particular radius. So, for instance, in Limpopo, they have been able to get ESCOM to work with them. The first group of techno girls passed their matric in 2012, and all of them passed with exemptions, and they went to university to do science subjects. So the first area of implementation of techno girls was actually in a rural area in Limpopo. I can't tell you exactly where in Limpopo, but it was done in Limpopo. So the idea is to get employers, local employers, so that transportation works for the children, because if somebody's child is going to have to move and go and stay in a boarding school or in a hotel in another town for them to have 1 week experience of work, the organizers of the programs are the ones who have determined that they prefer local employers and children from local schools so that they can deal with those aspects. However, I'm sure we can look at how we deal with children from rural areas, and if they were to say to NERSA, take them, we would definitely look at that. But they had indicated that their own criteria is local employment and intake. They have a particular criteria they utilize to select participants, and they work with schools and the Department of Education and the district offices on how they select the learners who participate in the program. We have little say over that as employers with whom these the learners are placed. So hopefully into the future they can improve that particular aspect. We are also giving them feedback as to how we are experiencing the programs and some of the things they can do to improve. I must say that NERSA joined the Department of Energy in the career day that they hosted, career exhibition that they hosted in Limpopo at the university. It was at the University of Limpopo late in August this year. And that is the department saying we're going to go to rural areas and deal with these issues. And we learned quite a lot. We're making suggestions. We're participating in the team from the department around that particular issue. Chair, and my attention has been drawn to the fact that I skipped the question about the component of colors and Indians in the questions that Member Lowe raised. We are in the process of reviewing our equity plan as an organization, as NERSA. We've gone through the DG review, so the Department of Labor, Department Director General's review of our equity plan has just happened. They've given us feedback. We are now reviewing the program, and we will then relook all aspects of the program, including which demographics we utilize to be able to set our targets. It's something that we're going through at the moment as an organization. Thank you, Chair.
Perhaps maybe just in summary, and especially taking cognizance of the fact that honorable members may not feel that we've adequately addressed this burning issue, I think when we distribute this reason for decision on the RCA, most of the questions that you're asking, like are customers paying for inefficiencies of FESCOM and all those sort of matters, please look out for them, because we satisfied that we actually have been thorough in the manner in which we dealt with the issues, and that the lots of costs which we did not feel that they prudently incurred, even the OCGTs and that sort of thing, that we have actually not allowed. Things like power buybacks and that. And when we come up with a presentation later on, and this, by the way, is a public document, and this reason for decision is also available on our website, but we will give you copies. It deals with all the matters, real returns. So if you feel that we haven't dealt with the questions of your real returns and all those sort of matters, the details will be there. And as we've agreed with the CEO, if the chairman allows us, we're quite happy to do a presentation in detail. And maybe just to add one last thing on the Sunrise Avidia conflict. That conflict, well, the court matters and the fights are really with TNPA, the National Ports Authority. So we've done our part in that regard in terms of providing licenses. But I thought it was important to state this, that as a regulator, third-party access is important, meaning one of the things that we're supposed to do is encourage development of industry, new players, and this sort of thing, and it's a consideration that we do give when we make licensing decisions. And we think that that's what we're trying to do, to encourage competition and but a more orderly development of industry. And it is a matter that obviously we're looking at, this Sunrise Energy Avidia matter. And yeah, hopefully it gets resolved in the interests of the public. But I think I just wanted to add those in the questions, and we are on your hands again.
Yeah, I miss the Anton Beach people little. Just to clear the uncertainty on whether or not we have a separate presentation. We have already had a discussion and had agreed that we will ask NASA, in fact there has been a request that we have NASA come do a presentation on the electricity industry, and I know the issues would be Eskom in particular, but the electricity industry in general, so that we'll prepare for, get a date and in the normal way send the areas of focus for NASA to prepare for their presentation. So that will return to. So we're happy to have a separate presentation for that. So others have follow-up questions. Honorable Makai and Honorable Honorable Esteban. Yeah, Honorable Mohamed Saleh, is your hand up? Because I can't see the hand. Thank you very much. Honorable Makai.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think everyone knows that I'm a huge fan of NERSA. They really do represent one of the better institutions in this country, and they're actually something that we should be quite proud of. The humility which they display in their work compared to our friends at Eskom is quite refreshing. I do just want to raise one or two points or questions. The first one is, with the record of decision, NERSA is world-class. It does world-class work, but where you guys really let yourself down is in the communication of your decisions to the public. I've spent some time on your website this morning, and it's atrocious. It's not easy to access via mobile, and frankly, South Africans who are data unable to, huge amounts of data, are not going to be able to access your site. So when you tell us that the decision in your press statement is on your website, it's a bad way to really clarify to the South African public what decisions you have taken, how you have stood firm against Eskom, how you have stood firm against Treasury, how you have stood firm against incredible amounts of political pressure from Auntie Lynn Brown and possibly Auntie Tina, Auntie Peterson as well. So I would really please urge you strongly, for the sake of the nation, to really clarify your record of decision. Make it simple. Advertise that you have the revenue in your available. Use it. Let the nation know what decisions you are taking. I'd also like to understand what interactions NERSA has had with Treasury and the ministers with regard to this price increase, because obviously there's been a lot of background around these meetings. The ministers have claimed to us and to the public they've met with NERSA. In no way have we ever seen what kind of conversations have been had with NERSA. We've not had access to any minutes of the conversations. And obviously I think we as the Portfolio Committee, or at least some of us on the Portfolio Committee, are deeply interested to understand these interactions, as are the public, South African public, I'm sure. Chair, I'll leave it there, but again, a big congratulations to NERSA, and thank you very much for your work.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Makai. Honorable Khele.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm just interested to understand as well to what extent you drill down into Eskom affairs. I have asked this before, but I mean, I do want to kind of flesh this out a bit, because I'm particularly interested. I mean, their primary energy costs, for instance, have gone up quite radically, and that's got a lot to do with the kinds of contracts that they enter into for coal supply. And I'm just interested, to what extent are you privy to those contracts? Do you analyze those? Do you see that they've been entered into properly and that it's prudent expenditure? If you could just give me some sense of your processes around that. But then also the issue around the running of the power stations. What we have seen particularly this year is that we've seen major unplanned outages at Eskom. And a lot of that seems to occur, in fact, just after they've done maintenance at a particular plant. So to what extent are you analyzing the kind of maintenance that gets done, the kind of planning that gets done around that, and to what extent are you drilling down there? And I also ask this in the context of particularly Duva Power Station. Now, I think there's been two incidents at Duva Power Station, the first one where the turbine flew out the roof. That was a while ago, and I think there's been another one where the turbine has flown out of the roof. Clearly something is going wrong there. Have you done an independent investigation was done. We still haven't seen that report, but I don't think it's been done by NERSA, and I'm just interested to know whether you are, in fact, conducting any investigations into those particular accidents, because I think it's clear that we have to drill down there and work out what exactly is going wrong and what is the cause of that. And then I think in the Duva case as well, I'll be interested to know whether any insurance was in fact paid out, because my understanding that in fact the insurance companies refused to pay out because it was negligence on the part of Eskom. And if you can give some comments on that. I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but I think these are big issues, so it'll be interesting to hear. And then also on a positive note, though, I see that you have made an announcement in the last few weeks that you're going to be looking at embedded generation at municipalities. What is the kind of stance you're going to take there? Because my understanding is that it's ultimately municipalities that will have to drive embedded generation, because it comes down to the municipal grids and how they deal with the revenue loss and things like that. So how are you going to be going about this? Are you working with municipalities to work out what is the best kind of program, or are you going to allow municipalities to implement their own particular programs according to their conditions? I'd just be interested in the approach that you're going to take around that. Thanks.
Honorable Stazen, before that, I just want to warn both Honorable Kheileng and Ners not to make this Eskom presentation.
Yeah.
This is a presentation about NERSA's annual report. So we run the risk of overshadowing what we're trying to do here. The reason we're calling back NERSA, this was raised twice in the portfolio committee, is precisely because of those reasons. Can we have a dedicated day to deal with this? They can see to what extent their responses can be given, but not in a manner that goes into details about issues relating to ESCO. We have no issues with regard to dealing with matters relating to ESCOM. We must return to that. We are quite prepared to do that. But let's not do that through this presentation. Honorable Stazen.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, on the gas regulation, on the gas squabbles, as we called it, although NERSA has only issued the licenses, this is energy, and it's in the public interest that this, and this has been going on for more than a year, 2 years, I'm not 100% sure. So that is NERSA's problem at the end. The fuel used in the diesel-driven generators, it's 8,000 million rand. That's what it costs the public, 8 billion rand. And those are only allowed 2 billion rand. So that's also in the public interest, and it's not good enough to say we're monitoring the situation. The 12.86% price increase, sadly, this is not only going to be 12.86%. I think the 12.86% is to municipalities. Then municipalities, that will be probably in April next year and July, whenever they, metros and things, do their budget. It won't be 12.86% to the end user. It will be way higher than that. That's why it's concerned. And that's also then nurses' sole purpose is to look after public interest. That's why I raised it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mohamed Shara.
Thanks, Chairperson. I've made a few notes here on the presentations by NERSA, but you have covered me on the last part in your submission. I thought that we were in a beauty contest of NERSA and ESCOM rather than to be in a portfolio committee meeting and listening to the presentation by NERSA, which we are supposed to seek clarity on. So I'm going to put that one aside. The CEO, in her response on the question by Honorable Law, I don't think that the response is satisfactory. Here you say you develop skills for you to be able to have employees as regulators, or you develop these people because there is no specific academic qualification they acquire or they can acquire as regulators. Now, you develop these skills, you empower these people, and then decide to throw them away with all what you've invested and decide to let them go and be an asset to Sasol or whatever companies that does the same thing that you do, based on the fact that you can't meet the standards of salaries. I fail to understand. Because you can't empower and empower and empower and decide to let go. Now, I think I need to be clarified as to how does that happen. You have more than 10 vacancies already. Why didn't you take those salaries of those who are not there and increase the salaries of the ones that are living, whom you have empowered yourselves? Why is this investment that you have made to these individuals, at the end you decide to just throw it in the drain? I think I need that clarity. It's important for me to be clarified. In your report here, you highlighted that you have done a preliminary report. You conducted a preliminary investigation on the load shedding, yes, in March 2014. But the report falls short of reflecting to the outcomes of the investigation. We would want to know what were the causes, you plan to do in ensuring that these load sheddings, they don't happen again. On the public participation process, vis-a-vis the double digit that you've given to ESCOM. I'm not going to enter into my understanding of the MYPD 203. I will leave that aside. I was once the employee of ESCOM. I know how these things work. But I'm not going to enter into that. I will leave it. What I want to understand on the public participation processes that you conducted, did you reach out to people of deterrence, rural areas of the Eastern Cape where they use electricity? Because those are the vulnerable people who don't even understand the breakdown that you've just given us on the 12% increase. Once ESCOM increases tariffs, those people are the first ones to jump and say, here is this government again charging us more on electricity. And there has to be a balance between the increase of tariffs and the free basic electricity. Now, I want to understand whether is the balance on those two, so that when we leave here to our constituencies on Mondays, we always on our constituencies, because Mondays is dedicated. You will have people flocking in your office asking. You come to Cape Town, you conduct a public participation process. Where was it? Was it in Civic Center or Civic Hall or Kylie Chao, Philippi? Poor areas, people that buys electricity. Or you decided to conduct public participation for the those who consume too much in this electricity that we are talking about today. So those are the clarities which I think I need so that when I leave here, I'm empowered. And I must also congratulate you, CEO, on your appointment. When I saw your surname, I was confused. I was like, who is this new CEO now? Why are we not informed as the committee? Only to find out there's a missing surname there. So we could not understand, some of us. So that double barrel should always must always reflect, so that we don't get confused, some of us, because that surname of yours now does not exist. The one that exists is the marital one. So it must reflect on the presentation so that we don't get confused. Thank you.
Members, you have been very efficient when it comes to time. So I'm sure you're going to accept that we're going to run a slight debate in relation to finishing our meeting, because we are exactly at 12:40 now. It's the time we should be finishing our meeting. So if you're happy, we can take another 10, 12 minutes.
Thanks, Chair. Just my last question, I promise. And you might not be able to answer it completely now, but I think I do need to put it into the pot so that when the electricity side comes back to us, you know, it's just on this issue of the grid connections of the REIPPs, because I think it is an important issue. And certainly what we've gathered in terms of what's been presented to us as a committee by, well, certainly by some of the IPPs as well as by ESCOM, is the current situation is that these IPPs were given cost estimates before they put their bid in by Eskom. When it finally came time to then start to connect them to the grid, Eskom then in some instances doubled the estimate that they had originally given, and that's obviously affected the business model of that. What they've also said is that Eskom hadn't actually planned for some areas to expand the grid to that, and Eskom's response was that the reason why they haven't done that grid expansion and why the estimates have gone up is that they weren't awarded enough of a price increase in the NYPD to in fact do that. So I'm just putting it out there because this is something that we're going to have to get to the bottom of in some way, and you don't have to answer me fully now, but I do think that we need to work out exactly what's going on here and work out how we resolve this, because clearly we need those electrons on the grid, and it's not happening at the moment.
Go ahead,
Chairman, I think thanks for those questions, and I think we'll take a cue from what you said earlier, Honourable Chair, that we come back and deal with electricity in detail, because as you can, you know, when you go through the list, almost all of them, other than a few, deal with this subject, and I think we think if we don't deal with them now, it's not out of disrespect to the honourable members. It's mainly to give us an opportunity to delve into detail on some of the questions. So if you just indulge us on that, obviously there are two questions that I'm sure we can deal with now, like communication, our website. Because there are issues on the website, so I'll get the CEO to deal with the website. And the learnership, the issues of the questions that was not adequately addressed. And about your surname, it's up to you whether you deal with that question. So, and that also will say, time in, because we, as Honourable Chair, as you say, we are supposed to conclude now. So if you don't mind, if we just deal with the issue of our website and learnership, and these questions we actually grateful for, and we'll come back with detailed answers when we come back to the committee. We do that.
Thank you, Chair. The point about...
I'm quite happy with the surname as it stands.
Chairperson, I'll deal with that last. On the issue of communication, Honourable Chair, through you, we take the point from Honourable Mackay. We could do better. We could have done better. We've received similar feedback about our website. We will go back and make sure that next year, this time, we tell a different story. There was also an issue of how we dealt with the decision. With the NYPD3 decisions, we do a press conference where people can ask questions actively, and there's an iterative process. This time around, we did a press statement, and the press statement did not do justice to the decision of NERSC. We take that point fully. Interactions with the National Treasury, DOE, DPE, we did that through the structured interaction processes that we have with government departments. We've always come in as an invitee of the DOE. We get given the questions that we need to respond to or the points that we need to respond to, and we've dealt with those issues in that particular manner. We're normally not the ones who would keep minutes of those task teams, so those entities would be the ones that would have to respond to those aspects. However, as I indicate, often we've been asked as a regulator, come and talk to us about this aspect, that aspect, that aspect, and would then prepare a presentation that would deal with those issues. The issues around the Eskom, I'll deal with them as the chairperson of NERSC has indicated, except, other than the question on Sunrise and Avidia, we hear the point that Member Esther Hazen is making, and we do recognize our role as a regulator. And as we always emphasize, we are always caught between conflicting interests, either of licensees amongst themselves, licensees, and consumers' licensees, and policymakers. The best defense we have is to act according to our law. I could quote another entity that was unhappy when their exclusivity in a particular area came to an end. But as a regulator, we had to act firmly in relation to that. So
We will not let the situation between Sunrise and NVIDIA get out of hand to the extent that our involvement in that process is indicated. We would act as guided by our own laws. And as of now, we are waiting to hear from both entities formally about what their issues are. We've had individual consultation processes on specific issues, and we will deal with those issues as they arise. The issue around salary, the vacancy rate, and training people and throwing money down the drain. It's a very interesting point. We would love to retain the staff that we hire. However, I don't know that there's any organization that can vouch that it will retain 100% of the people they have. In some instances, once people have decided to leave, they have decided to leave. Secondly, we are limited to utilize funds for vacant positions to counter offer individuals who've been made offers that we cannot sustain, because we have an organizational structure that needs to be staffed at certain levels in a particular way, and therefore that money has to be kept for that. Otherwise, if you reallocate that money to counter offers, you lose the vacancies. So the design of the organization then goes out of balance. But also the question is there any organization in this country that can afford to say we're training for ourselves only? I think at some point, as organizations in the country, we accept the fact that we're training for the South African economy. So if it's a loss to NERSA for that particular time, it's a gain for the entity to which this individual is going. And swings and roundabouts, we also gain when we do go out on recruitment. There are people who decide that they're stepping out of big monies and big purses, they're coming to work for government to fulfill other objectives, and therefore we benefit as well. So it's just one of those issues that we're going to chase for a very long time as an organization. And then just to deal with the points around public participation, Member Mohamed Salah, we take the points that you raise. It's issues that I had highlighted to the committee that were raised with us last year when we ran the MYPD3 process. And as an organization, we are looking internally to ensure that we expand our public participation sessions within the confines of budget and all of that, but it is no reason to exclude people from certain communities. But, for instance, if we look at how we set up public hearings for MYPD, we run workshops and outreach programs and would normally go into one province and would go to different parts. Where we hold our public hearing for the MYPD decision, it's not where we would have held community education workshops. And if I use the Northwest as an example, would have gone to Mafikeng with a workshop and then held the public hearing in Potchefstroom, and we try, but there's lots of room for improvement in terms of involving people from rural areas and those who are less literate. It's points that I acknowledged. Even in the RCA decision, the IBT and FBE would still be retained to protect the low-income users, and we do trust as a regulator that, in spite of having granted the MYP the RCA, that the low-end users would still be protected by the government policies of IBT as well as free basic electricity. We do have a number of different people who come to participate at our public hearings. When we were here in Cape Town, we had a lady who came with samples of what they do as a community to make sure that everybody survives, and that's all she spoke about. We're talking about MYPD3, 16% increase, and the lady came with sachets of salt and Weet-Bix and coffee and all of that, in her own way telling us how the poor people need to be considered when this decision is taken. And those views were taken into account in the way we reached the decision. So we try to ensure that everybody can participate, but we take the point that there's room for improvement, and perhaps we should look at other ways as well of involving other communities that are not close to amenities. That's a point we take. And Chairperson, what shall I say about the struggle of women and then in their lives? My chairperson has his own views about how I write my surname. Somebody else has their own views about it. I just tried to indicate that from an audit point of view, we will be able to account for who signed the documents in the organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any question that was not accepted?
No.
Okay.
No, no question.
question, Chair, except to congratulate Nelson.
Elder. I know you have every right to speak like an elder, but you must wait for your chance. Go ahead.
My apology, Chair. I was saying congratulate the NERSA team on receiving the clean audit or unqualified report for the period of 5 years, isn't it? Yeah. 9 years, yes. This is from the committee on behalf of Chair. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Masala has nothing more to say. Thanks very much to NERSA. Thank you very much, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen who joined today. So I'm told there's nothing happening this afternoon. It is for the committee. So the meeting is closed. We'll meet tomorrow at 10 o'clock. 2 o'clock tomorrow. Let's just be sure. 2 o'clock, yes. Tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And just for further certainty, by the way, I had overlooked the fact that there is a date actually for NERSA to come back. Yes. I don't want to tell you because you think it's too far. No. The 4th of November. So we just have to have a discussion about the scope, because sometimes we say 20 entities cover this, and then we realize in the course of questions that members would have been interested in other things that we didn't ask the presentation to cover. We just have to talk about that before they come. Thanks very much. Enjoy your lunch. Those ones who have money to buy lunch, please enjoy.
Thank you. So you must know global hunger, Thank you.